Get the latest sports in 1 hour. It's Crunch Time, weekdays from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m.
I hope you're ready. It's that time. Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answer.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig.
And we get the let out, and we rock into the 5 o'clock hour on a Tuesday. Via my Twitter account, I just sent out a story from Bleacher Report called A Season of Loss. The woman's name is Mirin Fader, M-I-R-I-N-F-A-D-E-R. And this is a very in-depth piece that was posted today about Sabrina. And I'll tell you what, I mean, we had the good fortune of following her up close and personal. She's been a guest many times on the show, and just, you know, the chance to see this firsthand has been an absolute treat and something, you know, we sports fans around here right now will probably remember forever. But how about learning some new stuff and getting some insight? It's a real personal piece, a really well done, and man. It's called Season of Loss, Bleacher Report. Oregon star and WNBA top prospect Sabrina Ionescu opens up to BR on her search for peace after losing her mentor, Kobe Bryant, and a chance to cap an historic college career with a national title. And like I said, good stuff, good stuff. And I just reached out to her, and hopefully we'll be able to get her as a guest on the show. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you want to jump on in, hit us up via text line 321-0824, because it is April 14th and I've been doing, I'll tell you what, you always hear, first of all, during the normal course of your life, what do you always hear when things get rough? If you suffered a loss, a breakup, you lost a job or whatever, you know, depressing kind of event could happen in your life. Sports has been the distraction. You know, you think about post 9/11 and on, you know the drill. I have found, because every day what I'm doing is I'm simply going to one of the sports sites, I'm clicking scores, and I'm going back exactly a year. So today, I went back to April 14th, 2019, and I got to tell you how therapeutic it is to just actually look at the scoreboard from that day, look at the golf tournament from that day, look at the playoffs in the case of hockey and basketball, and not just do the box score, but go through the recap, maybe watch the sound from folks, you know, if they were courtside at the game for ESPN or ABC, and just listen to them talk about the game. And it's like, yes, that's what we used to do. And that's what hopefully we will eventually get back to doing again. And I'm telling you, it's just, It's helped. It's added to my sense of normalcy. I'll share some of the stuff I dug up. But first, to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, let's bring in Steven from FLA. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve Tannen. I want to say I contacted Luke Jackson, and I told him on a voicemail that if he comes to Florida, I said, how about you and me and your kids go to Florida together? So I'm waiting for him to respond to me if he can fly to Florida this year so I can spend time with him and say congratulations being the best athlete for the Oregon Ducks men's basketball.
All right. Well, I hope he gets back to you, and I hope we all get to a position where we could fly around the country again, Stephen. It's always a pleasure to hear from you, and we hope you're well. So, like I said, I'm going back a year to just review some stories and hearken back to those thrilling days of yesteryear when there were games and action on the fields of play. I feel like I should have some theme music. So, a year ago, it was the final round of the Masters, and of course, the sports world was riveted by the comeback, the fifth green jacket that Tiger secured, because no one quite moves the needle in golf. I think they say, generally, when he's in contention, doesn't matter the tournament, doesn't always have to be the Masters or a major. You know, if he tees it up at Arnie's tournament or at one of the Texas tour stops or wherever it is, the viewership 35%, 38%, 40%. So we'll get to that. But right now, we're right back to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Tobiah. Tobiah, good afternoon. How you doing?
Hey, great, Steve. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
Hey, two things. One, first, a question. Someone or you mentioned on the show yesterday something about there being a Sabrina and Ruthie special, possibly a promo for the draft. Am I imagining that?
I'm not 100% sure.
That was me. Yeah, that was me. On tomorrow night at 7 o'clock on the Pac-12 network, they're having a show called Unfinished Business, and it talks about specifically Ruthie and Sabrina's relationship over the last 4 years of them playing together. I believe it's tomorrow night at 7 on the Pac-12 network.
Awesome. That's exactly what I wanted to know. I Googled it today, and I woke up, and I thought, am I dreaming? Is there really a special? I couldn't find anything about it. So, thank you. I'm not completely crazy.
No, we're not going nuts yet. We're well on our way, but not just yet. Hey, thanks for calling. And enjoy. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. There's about a half-inch-sized black spider on my ceiling. It's social distancing from me. It's about 8 feet away. Gotta confess, not that thrilled with the spider in the room. But I'll do my traditional grab a cup, get it caught in there, and then release it into the wild. No need to kill. So Tiger entered the final round a year ago, two shots behind Francisco Molinari, who at the time was the reigning British Open champ, having won across the pond in 2018. So Woods followed his Thursday, Friday. He went 70-67 on moving day on Saturday. If you recall, he shot a 66. Woods was 11 under, and in essence, you fast forward to the par 5 15th, and Tiger made a birdie. Molinari found trouble, made a double. Then that left Tiger on the lead for the first time in the round. Then we played the highlight a little bit earlier where he hit the brilliant 8-iron, and that set him up. He almost holed it, which, you know, that's one of those shots for the ages. I know. You have the chip in with DeMarco in 2005, where if you weren't aware, you would have learned what kind of golf ball he was using, because it rolled, it stopped at the edge of the cup. You got a perfect view of the swoosh, and it dropped. And he had the celebration bunker side with his caddy at the time, Stevie Williams. But he nearly aced it. He made the putt. He's on the 18th tee with a two-shot lead, knowing a bogey is going to win the Masters, and he ends up tapping in. The gallery explode. The win put him one behind Sam Snead for most career victories, which he tied this season. And, of course, it was his 15th major. He's back within three of Jack and, you know, continuing to give chase. with the win. Jack won the Masters at 46. He won at 43. He's the second oldest. Gary Player had gone 13 years between Masters victories. This was 14 for Tiger, so he broke that record. And, hey, that was one of the busiest shows we did. And at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have replay the interview we did with Ann Liguori, who, you know, covers the PGA for CBS Sports Radio National. And she was kind enough to join us that week. Also, 1 year ago in the NBA playoffs, the Trailblazers began their run, which, of course, would carry them all the way to the West Finals. They were home. They beat the Thunder 104-99. The victory ended a streak of 8 straight postseason losses. Damian Lillard led the scoring with 30. But if you hearken back to those thrilling days of yesteryear, Enes Kanter had a game. 20 points and a career playoff high for he. 18 rebounds. Blazers made it interesting, like they did a lot during the playoffs, even though they kept surviving and advancing. They almost blew a 19-point lead as Oklahoma City cut the margin to a point with 2.5 to go. But Lillard did one of those borderline logo threes, and he wound up scoring 30 points. And I'd forgotten, the Thunder, even though they were the lower seed, they had beaten Portland all 4 meetings that year during the regular season. There were 2 other games, complete and total blowouts. The Rockets wiped the Toyota Center floor with Utah, 122-90. James Harden, 29 points, 10 dimes, 8 boards. The Greek Freak went off huge as the Bucks took apart Detroit, 121-86 to open that series. Giannis, 24 points, and how about 17 rebounds? And in the other Eastern playoff game, the Celtics trailed by 7 entering the third quarter. They went into lockdown mode, held Indiana to just 8 points in the whole quarter, and took it by 10 and went up 1 game to none. Obviously, this time of year, we go on Frozen Pond. We had 4 games as the first round kind of started to take shape. In Pittsburgh, the Islanders, who had just 1 playoff series win the past 24 seasons, were about to make it 2. They torched the Penguins 4-1, spotted the host a goal lead 13 minutes into the first, then scored 4 unanswered the rest of the way. Robin Leonard in the pipes, solid game, turned aside 25 of 26 shots, and they took a commanding 3-0 lead. In Sin City, the big guns of Vegas, Max Pacioretty, Paul Stastny, and Mark Stone came across. Stone had his first career hat trick in a win against San Jose that put the defending West champs up 2-1. And then, at the home of the eventual champs, Winnipeg's Kyle Connor, the pride of Shelby Township in Michigan, who actually played collegiately for the Wolverines, banged home a couple of goals in a 6-3 win. They'd dropped the first 2 at home and avoided the 3-0 hole. And in Columbus, the Blue Jackets inched closer to their first ever playoff series win, 3-1. Their netminder, Sergei Bobrovsky, made 30 saves, including 16 in the third period. They shut the door and set the stage as the 8 seed would sweep the top seed, Tampa, who posted one of the greatest regular seasons in league history with 128 points and then lost 4-0. On the MLB docket, Germán Márquez of the Rockies one-hit the Giants at San Francisco in a 4-0 win. Evan Longoria, the lone safety, with an 8th-inning single, wrecked the attempt at a no-no. Another nice outing took us to Fenway as the Bo Sox David Price threw blanks over 7 innings as Boston shut out the Orioles 4-0. Shortstop Xander Bogaerts busted open a 1-run game with a 3-run shot in the 8th. In Seattle, current Yankee then Astro Gerrit Cole cranked out a tremendous performance, struck out 11 Mariners in a 3-2 nail biter, got the best of Gonzalez, got support in the form of a couple of Michael Brantley RBI. In Atlanta, a rare struggle on the hill for Jacob deGrom, who allowed 3 runs, got run himself after 5 innings, gave up homers to Nick Markakis and Josh Donaldson as Julio Teheran got the best of him. And at the time, it's also at this time of year in baseball, you look at their record and it's like they're both 9-6. That would change a little bit. And so I almost feel like Walter Cronkite, and that's the way it was, April 14th, 2019. But that's what was happening, and I'm telling you, it's kind of acting somewhat therapeutic going back and looking at what was happening 1 year ago today. And like I said, it's nice to, especially depending on the site. So you go to the box score and you're like, all right, who scored what? Then you go to the recap because you want to find out, all right, who had 32 points but 17 in the fourth quarter. Then you go to the video and you start seeing, you know, the breakdown. And, you know, and with baseball, I mean, I don't think I'm going to remember many specifics about an April game a year ago. But with the NBA playoffs, definitely a lot of familiar stuff is starting to come back. And for the NHL, when it's, some of the West Coast series, or, you know, I remember watching the Islanders because it had been a million years since they won a playoff series. So some of that had a bit of a familiar feel to it. All right, 284-8571. It's your Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline if you'd like to jump on in. By the way, you've got to love technology. I told you, Miren Fader, who wrote that article about Sabrina, I had taken the last couple breaks, read through it, sent her an email, see if she wants to come on the show, and she will be joining us on Thursday. So we'll have Aaron Fentress on. So we're still doing our best to crank out actual sports talk radio shows or whatever it is that we do. If you want in, let me know exactly what it is you want to talk about. Oh, by the way, you know, speaking of Sabrina, she won another award. I didn't think there were any left. I think she accidentally is going to win like the NBA MVP. They're going to be like, we're just trained. An award is given out. Let's give it to the guard out there in Eugene because she's going to get them all anyway. So it's the Collegiate Women's Sports Award, the 2019-2020 Honda Award for Women's Basketball. They've been giving this out for 44 years, and there were 1,000 of the 1,000 member schools. I mean, this is a pretty substantial award and vote. They're talking about, so what do we have to be off by 6? All right, I'm going to read the list of awards she's won so far. Naismith, Wooden, Wade, Player of the Year by the AP, U.S. Basketball Writers, ESPN.com, Unanimous First Team All-American, Lieberman National Point Guard of the Year, taking home both honors for the third straight year, and she won her third straight Pac-12 Player of the Year. Telling you, it's literally the ultimate clean sweep, and hopefully this and logically this seems like it would all culminate on Friday at about 4:08 when she is the first player taken in the WNBA draft. And I immediately am going to go like this. I already have it saved because I want to make sure I get my New York Liberty Sabrina something. Hey, what are the odds, A, that this New Yorker would wind up doing a sports show in Eugene, that this magnificent player from Walnut Creek, California, being pursued by everybody, would decide to be a Duck, have this kind of career, and end up the top pick and going to the New York franchise? In the article, that I tweeted out. So she is still looking for a handler, for management, for representation. And somebody said that she was considering three different shoe companies. And I was like, really? I mean, are you with me? I know the rule is never assume because you make an ass of you and me. But I would think maybe Nike have an inside track here. Am I missing something? But anyway, I mean, you know, whatever she picks, I mean, it'll be nice to see her go ka-ching. So that, I guess that's kind of another little sidetrack to this ever-growing, intriguing story of number 20. All right, so we've got the Liguori interview coming up. I want to remind you and give a shout-out to our friends at Small World Auto at 2090 West 11th in Eugene. The phone number is 228-9774. They are celebrating 50 years in business, being a part of our business community. And Marty and the folks all wanted me to express their thanks for your loyal patronage. They are in the the same location out there on West 11th. They're a family-owned automotive service center, and because of your loyalty, they've been able to grow into a multi-service bay repair shop. You know, they tell you, you know, keep up on those scheduled maintenance checkpoints, but if you need service, domestic, import, they're there for you. All parts and labor are covered by their 12-month nationwide warranty, a terrific reputation for integrity and the quality of the work they do. And again, online, smallworldauto.com. And like Marty says, if you're not yet, they'd love to have you as a member of the Small World family. All right, 284-8571. Your Oregon fuel injection hotline. What do you say we take a break now? We'll be back with a Coors Light update. I'll share a few thoughts, and we'll flash back a year and talk with Ann Liguori about Tiger's Masters win. Coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Garrity RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top five RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Garrity.com.
For almost 50 years, the New York Yankees and the last name Steinbrenner have almost been one and the same. Hank Steinbrenner was the oldest son of late owner George Steinbrenner and most resembled the boss's candor and outspoken personality, very much in contrast with his brother Hal's quiet disposition. Even though Hank had not been directly involved in his day-to-day baseball operations for several years now, his youngest brother Hal always respected his only brother's counsel. For Hal and his sisters Jenny and Jessica, Hank's death is a huge blow to what Hal has described as a tight-knit family who loves nothing more than the Yankees.
Marley Rivera of ESPN on the passing of Hank Steinbrenner at age 63. Boss George, oldest son, and it's his oldest child. And though he had a brief period after his dad was no longer able to run the team, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in late 2006, he really wasn't what you would call the public face. I mean, I don't tell you guys, you could pick George Steinbrenner out of a lineup. The face of the Yankees on field has always been, you know, Jeets and maybe Rivera. But off field, it was always Brian Cashman, especially, you know, once it got to be the post-Joe Torre era. For the record, Boss George passed away in the summer of 2010. And in 07, 08, I remember we started to see Hank occasionally. He was actually named after his grandfather, George's dad, who made the family wealth in the shipping business, which George inherited, turned millions into more than a billion. And during his heyday in New York, whenever Reggie Jackson would talk about Steinbrenner. Sometimes he'd call him Mr. Steinbrenner. Sometimes he'd call him the boss. Sometimes he'd call him George. But if there was any tension, and he had a famous interview one time where somebody, one of the New York reporters, probably Philip Bondi or Lupica or Bill Madden asked him a point blank question about Steinbrenner and a decision he had made. And Reggie said, I best not answer that. The man with the boats is still the boss. He used to refer to him as the man with the boats. But the passing of Steinbrenner, who had been ill for a while. And, you know, one of his deals was he often would speak off the cuff and had a reputation as a bit of a big mouth, sometimes came across as, I guess you would say, an entitled jerk. He had a feud with John Henry, the part owner of the Red Sox, about Red Sox Nation. And his quote from 2008, Red Sox Nation, what a bunch of bull blank that is. That was a creation of the Red Sox and ESPN. And he said, which is filled with Red Sox fans. Yeah, ESPN hardly ever covered the Yankees, right? And he said, go anywhere in America, you won't see Red Sox hats and jackets. You'll see Yankees hats and jackets. It's a Yankee country. And he went on and on. Then there was a spring training a couple of years later. He got into a dispute with the Tampa Bay Rays. And he says, I don't want these teams to forget who subsidizes a lot of them. It's the Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers, Mets. I would prefer if teams want to target the Yankees, they at least start giving some of the revenue sharing and luxury tax money back. And it's like, oh, God, man, come off a little entitled, do we? All right, folks, it was a year ago today that one Eldrick Tiger Woods won the 2019 Masters, and our affiliation with CBS Sports Radio on a few occasions has afforded us the opportunity to speak with one of the most prominent radio voices in the sport of golf. And we had this chance to speak in the aftermath of an incredible event like that with Ann Liguori of CBS Sports Radio coming at you now. 95.3 The Score. Let's talk some Masters. Who better? Our next guest, who patrolled Augusta National with her usual A-plus coverage for CBS Sports Radio. She's an author, an entrepreneur, a pioneer in the industry. You could follow along on Twitter. Use the handle at Ann Liguori. And always my pleasure. How is life treating you these days?
Steve, it's always good to talk to you. And just still on a high from such a great Masters week. It was just so exciting. It was driving back yesterday. I was feeling so good until I actually was, you know, heard the devastating news about Notre Dame Cathedral, near the Cathedral in Paris that, you know, we all have visited many, many times. And I was just feeling so great until then. But anyway. That's life, right?
I see where you're going with this, but you've covered some tremendous events, and you know, as golf fans, a lot of us can recite moments, you know, Jack's yes sir moment. And I know it's only been 48 hours and a lot of emotions, but of all you've had the pleasure to witness, how high up the list does Tiger winning this one jump?
Well, you know, I think it has to be obviously, you know, one of the top comeback stories in sports, if not, you know, the biggest comeback story, particularly in golf, just because of what, you know, he went through, you know, personally and physically. And the fact that, you know, he never thought he'd actually ever play again. There was a time when, you know, the first three back procedures did not work, and he was in so much pain, he couldn't even, like, get out of the car or get off the sofa. You hear all kinds of stories about, you know, what he was going through. And then the personal struggles and the scandal and, you know, the addiction to the painkillers and the DUI. And, I mean, his life was just a mess, personally and, you know, and physically for a while there. So he basically, you know, just turned it all around. I mean, it was a miracle that the fourth back procedure worked. He knows that. He feels like he's a walking miracle. And I think, you know, that lends into the whole transformation of Tiger Woods because, you know, he knows that this is his kind of second lease on life. And he's just, I think that has made him so much appreciative of, you know, what he's done in the past and what he can do in the future. And so, yeah, I just think his comeback story for those, all those reasons and many more make it, you know, probably the greatest comeback story in golf for sure. So,
yeah, you know, one other thing, I got a lot to ask, but it dawned on me earlier today, is you were not only there for the Masters, you were there for the weekend before, you know, that first ever Women's Amateur Championship. And as someone who's been on the front lines for women's roles in sports, I know you're familiar with the controversies over the years, Hootie Johnson versus Martha Burke. To see just how well received and what an incredible event that was, what was it like for you to witness something? I'm to call it a part of golf history.
Steve, I have to say, I was so excited and so proud. I got in, I drove in extra early. I drove in Friday. Saturday morning, I zipped to Augusta National, you know, got my credential, got all my equipment set up for to be on the air on WFAN at 7 a.m. because the ceremonial tee shots were hit at 7:45. And I wanted to be right there. And there's actually a screenshot that, you know, somebody sent me where they saw me. It was so early, and I got in so late. I was actually wearing my glasses. I couldn't get my contacts in. But I was right there on the first tee box watching Nancy Lopez, Annika Sorenstam, Lorena Ochoa, and Siri Pack, and Chairman Fred Ridley, you know, just basically open up the whole women's amateur event. So it was – I was more nervous, I said, for Nancy Lopez than I think she was, and she assured me afterwards when I talked to her that no, she was really, really nervous. But it was so meaningful for women's golf, girls' golf, because obviously the attention that Augusta National gets when they put on the Masters and when they do anything, and the ratings for this amateur championship were the highest ever of any amateur tournament. And, you know, these Jennifer Kupcho played so well. You know, she shot that 5-under 67. She eagled a 13th from, you know, she hit a 3-hybrid from 211 yards to 6 inches, made the putt for eagle. And it was just so exciting and thrilling. And I saw all these little girls with their parents watching in awe. And then when I went into the merchandise building, they were all scrambling around trying to buy, you know, any kind of memento from this very historic occasion, you know, the first ever women's tournament at Augusta National. So it really means a lot. You know, they didn't accept women members until 2012. And I was there for the pro, you know, I watched the protest, covered it. Augusta National was not going to be forced into accepting, you know, women as members, or inviting women as members, because they invite you. You don't ask them.
Right.
And, you know, so they've had this long history of men only. And so this was very inclusive, and it did a lot for the game of golf. I think more and more people can see how far these women hit the ball and what great players they are. And I think it also helped the LPGA, because even though it was going against the first major on the calendar, you know, these women are going to become pros on the LPGA, and people are going to know their names. And it just helps golf in general. So Chairman Ridley has to be commended. The whole Augusta National has to be commended for initiating this. And, you know, Fred Ridley actually credited his three daughters last year for coming up with the idea. So thank goodness he has daughters.
No, my wife was watching, and she's like, I'm not even a golf fan. Why am I crying at the end? It was just...
Exactly, because she knows how significant this is for not only for women in golf, but for all of golf. I mean, they're always talking about growing the game and getting more, you know, people playing. And little girls now know that if they practice hard and are serious about the game and have the talent and the skill set, you know, they might be able to play in this major amateur championship, great recognition at Augusta National. They might be invited, and they might have a future in golf as a professional. So it certainly had an amazing impact, and I think we'll see that impact
now,
the years to come.
And now it's another terrific event to look forward to on the map. We're talking with Ann Liguori. You know, back to the Masters, I've always said that Tiger, for all his spectacular, the reason he's him, because on Sunday, he finds his way to par, and he just knows how to navigate his way home. As we saw Molinari and some of the others find Rays Creek or other trouble. I mean, you were there. How much just his steely nature and ability to avoid danger and just remain in each hole? I mean, just how did that just shine through?
Well, absolutely. I mean, obviously, he knows that golf course better than anybody. And he was just waiting, you know, very patiently for all these guys to kind of make their mistakes and just plodding along. And sure enough, on 12, you know, most of them found Rays Creek,
right.
and he was able to get on the green off the tee box safely. And then he walks up to the green, and he's just standing there waiting. And I'm sure that was somewhat intimidating for, you know, Molinari and Finau. But he just knows what to do. He's smart. And, yeah, I mean, he's not perfect. You know, he's going to make mistakes. But it is when it comes down to the final Sunday of the Masters, you know, the last nine, you have to know what you're doing, and you know, you kind of rely on your experience and your patience and your wisdom, and nobody, you know, is better than that than Tiger Woods. So he was able to, and then he ended up, you know, making birdies, you know, later on in the round, and you know, was just incredible. I mean, the other guys kind of faltered, basically. I mean, although Koepka was there right in there for a while, too, and he faltered on the green. But, you know, Tiger's just, he's just so experienced. And to me, he just outsmarted everybody else.
A couple final thoughts for Ann. You know, in the immediate aftermath, the hugs from mom and the kids, you know, then he gets going in to sign his scorecard. And I don't know that I've seen this. Actually, I think I've seen this on the LPGA, but guys like Zach Johnson and Koepka and Bernard Langer were waiting for him. What does that say that while everybody might not be in love with Tiger, seeing those players hanging around, I mean, what does that say about that kind of support?
Right. I mean, that shows you this transformation. I mean, they have so much, they've always had so much respect for Tiger Woods.
Sure.
But in the last couple of years with his personality change in the last, what, 2 or 3 years, where he's become more friendly, not only to his colleagues, but to the media and to the fans. He spends more time, you know, he spent a lot of time helping them at the President's Cup and coach, assistant coaching and getting to know these guys when he couldn't play. And they certainly respect him, but now they really like him. You know, he's likable now. And so it showed. They all just, a lot of them just hung around and wanted to congratulate him and showed their support for him. And all the guys there, Justin Thomas and DJ and Brooks, you know, they all live in the Jupiter area, and they're all friends. They
right.
all go out and play together. And they all were very instrumental in being his friend when he was going through, you know, the dark times when he couldn't play that much. And so, and he thanked them all for their support. So now they like him, which wasn't the case before. He just, when he dominated the game, and these kids grew up idolizing him. And you know, because he couldn't play for a while, they're not intimidated by him
right.
anymore, but they respect him. And then to see him go out there and win his fifth green jacket, his 15th, you know, grand major title, they're in awe of him again. I don't know if I don't think they're going to be intimidated by, you know, when they play with him in the future, but, you know, they're just in awe that he was able to come back and win another title.
All right, one last thing. I mean, we know how suited his game is to Augusta. But when you look at the next two majors, next month, Bethpage Black, where he's won an Open. Then the Open is at Pebble, where he lapped the field. So I know this might seem a little melodramatic, but are the golf gods again smiling on him? And maybe we've just seen chapter one of this comeback? Because, as you well know, the buildup to these next two majors at those venues is going to be nuts.
Exactly. And Bethpage on Long Island, my neck of the woods.
Yep.
He won there in 2002. And, you know, it's a different Tiger, though. You know, he doesn't have the length he used to. And that course, you need a lot of stamina. And you have to be, you know, 100%. It just depends how he, you know, how physically he's doing when he gets into that tournament. I'm not gonna bet against him. That's for sure. We saw what he could do at Augusta National, but you know, Bethpage, the U.S. Open, it's a whole different ball game, and you know, he realizes even at Augusta National, any number of those guys could have won, and a lot of things happened toward the end there that enabled Tiger, obviously, to put on his fifth green jacket. But at Bethpage, yeah, he has a very, very good shot, but. You know, it's really about length on that golf course, and so many of these younger guns now can outdrive them, and it just really depends on the rest of the field. Well, maybe Brooks Koepka will win his third straight U.S. Open. I mean, I wouldn't bet against Brooks Koepka. That guy's unbelievable, and he almost was able to do it on Sunday at Augusta National. But it's just going to be exciting, and yeah, it really brings a lot more people back to the game because of Tiger's win and the fact that he's going into Bethpage where he has one. He's going into Pebble Beach where he has one in the past. So it's going to be really exciting, and you can't count him out at all. I mean, he's certainly going to be, you know, one of the favorites going into both.
Nope, and we can't look away. Folks, she is Ann Liguori. Follow along all the amazing things she's up to on her Twitter feed at Ann Liguori. The website, AnnLiguori.com, allows you to access her weekly sports interview. And I always enjoy speaking with you. Your time and insight are always greatly appreciated. Thanks so much for joining us. And I definitely look forward to chatting again later in the season.
Would love it. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care, Ann.
I don't usually geek out over interviews, but with her, I did. That was after Tiger won last year. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more Sports Talk 95.3 The Score.
KUJZ is 95.3 The Score. And now, it's the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Yo, Doc Nick.
Hello, host Steve. Nick Rogers back. Well, I guess I didn't leave, but I'm welcome back to... Sports Talk. I'm Nick Rogers at the Coors Light Frostbrewed Sports Desk for the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment that is made to chill. Some very good tweets. One of them from @BaseballBrit. This is a guy, I think his name is Alex. I don't want to guess on his name. That might have been a bad guess. But he toured the United States last summer, doing a tour of all 30 major league parks and a bunch of minor league stadiums. And he's an English guy and he loves baseball. He posted a video of a home run that was hit in the, I believe it's the Chinese Professional Baseball League. They're playing real games. And a guy hit a home run so far into a stadium without fans that it bounced off the seat, and it looked like somebody threw it back. I don't know if he was the home team or the away team, but it @BaseballBrit tweeted, a home run was spanked today by Cao Kui Hui of the Guardians. Love that the stairs chucked it back. I absolutely butchered that name, but it's a very funny video. We also have @MarkBerman, who tweeted an article from the Wall Street Journal that has put the best possible spin zone out there for 49er fans if you're still bummed about the Super Bowl. From @MarkBerman, from the article, some experts think that the 49ers blowing their Super Bowl lead could have saved lives because the loss kept San Francisco from hosting a championship parade a few days later that would have spread and exposed more to the virus. So not only now can 49er fans get over the loss, they can get over it by saying their team saved lives. And that's really the way to go when you have to think about it. Just an incredible spin zone and just a wild story in general as well. But our tweet of the day is from Roger Sherman, at Roger. He writes for The Ringer. He's the one who posted the tweet that I then saw that inspired my What Are You Doing back in the 3 o'clock hour of Dave Gettleman, because he said... very strange quote. Starts out normal and then it gets weird. Let's see if you can figure it out. Quote, obviously when we would go to the workouts, a lot of times the night before, our coach and that scout would be at the pro day and would take one, two, or three of the players out to dinner and have some conversations that way. We're losing the personal touch points. We have the visual touch point, but we're really missing out on the personal touch point when you can smell or feel a guy. The idea that Dave Gettleman is out here actually smelling 20, 21, 22-year-old kids to see if they have the smell of being a New York Giant or when he was a Carolina Panthers executive, well, all of it. All of it is very strange and very weird, and Dave Gettleman should not be smelling people. And at Roger tweeted, I feel like we should be paying more attention to Dave Gettleman saying this year's draft is tough because he can't smell the players. It doesn't make sense, Steve. This is a guy leading your team and your organization, and he's just smelling people.
Yo, home, smell you later.
See, that's the better dad joke, the better pun that you should have gone with that you didn't go with earlier. So thanks to at Roger for the refreshing tweet of the day. You can follow the station on Twitter at 953thescore. Follow me on Twitter at Rick Nodgers. And follow Steve on Twitter at SportsTalk953. Do not be a jerk. Just do it.
All right. Final couple minutes of the program. By the way, I listened to the entirety of that interview. Anne Liguori just has an amazing style, knowledge. She's the consummate professional, the first woman ever to host a regular weekly radio show on an all-sports radio station, dating back to 1987, 1988, obviously wired into golf, and just – classy and generous with her time to join us out here in little old Eugene, Oregon. I mean, she's a New Yorker. She's a New York radio, national radio. She's a powerhouse. So really appreciate that. I hope you all enjoyed it as well. Looking ahead to tomorrow, I'm now putting together some show for the week. I've got a really cool throwback interview the day before Oregon crushed Florida State in the 2015 Rose Bowl with Curtis Conway, the Pac-12 Network. We'll get that this week. Matt Preem of 24/7 Sports will join us tomorrow. He threw something really interesting out on Twitter. For Oregon sports, you get to retire one number from each sport. What would it be? So I want to delve into that a little bit, and also want to thank Michelle Vopel of ESPN for joining us talking WNBA draft and Sabrina and Ruthie and Satu and all that good stuff. She's terrific as well. So thanks, everybody. Have yourselves a magnificent evening. And thanks for listening to Crunch Time and Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score.
He goes!